Blog Talk Radio.
Lori Smith, one child abuse survivor to another restoration. Glad to be here. I missed my show last week, actually for the last couple weeks. And sorry about that for everybody who tuned in. I had a bad cold and forgot to cancel the show. And then another night I was just exhausted and I forgot to cancel the show, so I'm really sorry. And I usually try to cancel the shows ahead of time, that way people don't show up and then nobody's here. But I do appreciate everybody who's taking the time to listen. We're looking at a topic right now dealing with personal boundaries and boundary issues. And that's what we're covering from Hovoka.org. So, yeah, I'm just a survivor. You know, I'm not a counselor or therapist or anything like that. I've just been doing Blog Talk Radio since 2009. It's 2018, November 26th, Monday night here, 10 o'clock in the evening, Alberta, Canada. And, you know, I'm just doing these shows as one survivor to another, really. Just to try to share resources and sort of, you know, be a source of encouragement for other survivors out here who may not have anybody to talk to and just don't know how you're going to cope, and, you know, that there, you know, just there is help out there. You have to look for it. You know, you have to reach out and get help. I know I started to reach out in basically 2009. I started my healing journey in 2007, but I didn't do a whole lot of work in it until 2009. That's when I started to really reach out to people, you know, to look for resources, right? And there are resources out there, and but you do have to look for them, right? I'm the Alberta Ambassador for NASCA, N-A-A-S-C-A. That's National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And you can go to the website there and get all kinds of resources and info, and you can talk to people. You know, there's other ambassadors in all over the place, all over the United States, all over Canada, other parts of the world, and, you know, these people can hopefully help you get some resources if you need them, right? If you're a survivor and you're looking for some information, just go to NASCA, NASCA.org, and take a look there and see if something there might help you, might be of use to you. And if not, get a hold of me or get a hold of one of the ambassadors there at NASCA, and we'll try to find it for you. So if you're a survivor and you're listening tonight, make sure you're in a safe place. You know, you want to be safe enough to be listening. I usually say this on all my shows because you want to do a safety check. You don't want to hurt yourself or hurt somebody else being triggered by information that might cause you to go backward in your healing journey or something, and that you don't want. And so make sure you're in that safe place, right? If not, just turn the show off. And anybody else listening, you have to listen at your own discretion. You know, I'm talking about child abuse and adult survivor issues, and these are very serious issues. So it's not a very comfortable topic for most people. And, you know, you just need to make sure that you're okay with it. Otherwise, I mean, you know, just turn the show off. You won't be hurting my feelings at all. I do have the chat room open there if anybody wants to sit in there with a link to Hovoka. We're looking at personal boundaries. This is one of the last sort of topics, I guess, from Hovoka that we're going to cover. We've pretty well checked everything out there. It's a great website. That's HAVOCA, Help for Adult Victims of Child Abuse, .org. HAVOCA.org. And you can go to their survivor info and hit the tabs and scroll through there and see what they have. They have all kinds of info there for people. So take a look. It's really good info. So we'll just pick up where we left off. I'm not going to go back and repeat too much of what we were talking about the last show a few weeks ago. This is just the beginning part of their looking at personal boundaries. So they said boundaries define limits, mark off dividing lines. The purpose of a boundary is to make clear separations between, you know, between what we're going to allow in our life and what we're not, right? They basically help people to protect themselves, you know, in healthy ways, learning how to have what healthy boundaries are, how to set them, how to defend them. So we talked about that last time, took a look at that. So we'll just pick up right where we left off. So they said here, this is from Havoka.org, and I'm just reading right from their website. We need to start becoming aware of what healthy behavior and acceptable interaction dynamics look like before we can start practicing them ourselves and demanding the proper treatment from others. We need to start learning how to be emotionally honest with ourselves, how to start owning our feelings, and how to communicate in a direct and honest manner. Setting personal boundaries is a vital part of healthy relationships, which are not possible without communication. And they say here, the first thing we need to learn to do is communicate without blaming. And that means stop saying things like, quote unquote, you make me angry, or you hurt me, or you make me crazy, or how could you do that to me after all I've done for you, etc. These are the very types of messages we got in childhood that has warped our perspective of our own emotional process, on our own emotional process. So the person that wrote this article said, I grew up believing that I had the power to make my father angry and to break my mother's heart. I thought that I was supposed to be perfect, and that if I was not, I was causing the people I loved great pain. I grew up believing that something was wrong with me because I was human. I grew up believing that I had power over other people's feelings, and they had power over mine. And there's a lot in these articles. You know, we could spend weeks really talking about these, just a little blurb like that. There's so much in it, but, you know, we won't take the time to do that. We're just basically taking a look at it and talking a little bit about it. But, you know, there's all kinds of good information out there about boundaries. I found that, years ago I looked at John Bradshaw's work, and I have a couple of his books, and one of them's like a workbook dealing with codependency. And that has a lot of information in there about boundary work. It's really, really helpful. John Bradshaw, as well as Robert Burney. He has great info. You can go to his website, Joy to You and Me, or just type in Robert Burney, B-U-R-N-E-Y. And he has a great book, The Dance of Wounded Souls. That's also about codependency, but also talking a lot about boundaries. And so I did take a look at all that years ago, which was very helpful for me. I needed to learn boundary work because I had no healthy boundary stuff at all. I had to go and like learn it from scratch, and I'm still working on it because I still don't have it down, you know. But I do know that I'm not going to let anybody abuse me, so, you know, I'm going to treat people with dignity and respect and care and concern, just the same as I would expect from somebody else to treat me with the same treatment. So that's all I'm expecting, you know. But that's good, because I don't want to be re-victimized. I'm just, you know, I've had enough. And so in my adult years, you know, I'm not allowing anybody to abuse me anymore. But I still have issues with some boundary stuff. And we'll look at more of this article. You can go check this out yourself. It's really quite good. As we progress through here, maybe we won't get to it tonight, but maybe next show, like next Monday night. Or you can go check this out yourself. It's really good info. And but yeah, we could spend, I mean, weeks just on this one part. We need to start becoming aware of what healthy behavior and acceptable interaction dynamics look like before we can start practicing them ourselves. And that's just true. I mean, if a person's grown up in a dysfunctional, abusive environment, you know, not being shown as a child or as a youth what proper, like, healthy boundaries, healthy behaviors, acceptable interactions, you know, how is a young person being molded and shaped with all of those dysfunctional behaviors and dysfunctional ways of dealing with things, and how are they supposed to know proper boundaries? You don't learn that stuff, and that's why I've had a hard time my whole life really dealing with this stuff. And it's some of it's you know, not that big of a deal, but some of it was. Cost me jobs, many times jobs, and, you know, just quitting jobs over stuff that really was boundary issues that I had no idea how to handle. I'm getting a lot better at it as I get older, and I'm, you know, basically treat people with respect and dignity. Just, you know, proper human dignity that I would want afforded back to me. And then if that doesn't happen, then there's a problem. Because I'm like, look, I'm going to treat you right, so I expect to be treated right back. And then I'm getting better at the confrontation. But I used to be horrible at it. And so I'm learning, but it's just such a slow process. But it's how, you know, how do we even know what these behaviors are if you've never been shown? I had to do a lot of work to look at, wow, where I came from, the mess that I grew up in, what it did to warp my very existence on the planet, and then try to figure out, okay, well, you know, how am I going to do this? I had to do a quick fix when I was in my early 20s just because I wanted to be able to keep a job so that I could survive and not end up on the street, because there was no way anybody was going to be looking after me. So I had to make sure that, you know, I could work, maintain, pay my bills, and, you know, sort of make it through, you know, just getting started in my adult years, because I had no idea how to do it. I had done drugs from the age of 12 until 22, basically 21, 22. 22 is basically when I got off the drugs, but, you know, I just didn't have a clue. So I had to really work hard to, for the first early part of my 20s, just to try to fit in with people that were my age group, to get these, to find work, right, and to be able to keep a job. And so I managed, but still had all kinds of problems dealing with boundary issues. So it's taken me a long, long time to deal with this stuff. I really wish that I would have started this stuff a long time ago. Like, I've said this many times on these shows since 2009 here, the last 9 years. I've said that many times, I'm sure. You know, I wish I would have started earlier and started younger, getting help, right, instead of waiting till the age of 42 to finally reach out. But I was just so messed up. That's the problem with abuse, you know. It's a harsh situation. And most people, I've done some reading, and just, you know, just looking around on the internet, so many people don't actually reach out until they're about in their 30s. That's when they sort of have like a breakdown and have to reach out for some help. 30s, 40s, you know, it can happen, right? It happened to me at the age of 41, 42. So it's a harsh situation, right? Then you have to try to, you know, spend the next so many years working through this stuff. It's very, very difficult. So they said, I guess what we could look at here is, first thing we need to learn to do is communicate without blaming. That means stop saying things like, you make me so angry, or quote unquote, you know, you hurt me, or you make me crazy, or any number of things like that. They're the types of messages that we got in childhood that warped us. So we need to change that. And also, this person who wrote this article says they grew up believing they had the power to actually make their father angry or to break their mother's heart. And just by their actions or whatever, I suppose. I thought that I was supposed to be perfect, and that if I was not, I was causing the people I loved great pain. I grew up believing that something was wrong with me because I was human. Yeah, I can relate to that. The first part of what she's talking about, I think it's a woman who wrote this article. I don't know. They didn't put a name on it. But anyway, what they're saying there is, you know, that they had the power to make their father angry or to break their mother's heart. I don't really relate to that. I mean, my parents were just angry all the time anyway. It didn't matter what we were doing. We could have been behaving ourselves or not and been abused. So that's the problem with abuse, right? It's not necessarily because, you know, a child is doing something wrong. It's a way to control, and it's a way to manipulate. And so, you know, to overpower and to make sure you get your needs met. So that's what my parents were both all about, is meeting their own needs, and they didn't care about the needs of their children, and they were highly abusive people. But I do relate to what this person says here as far as I grew up believing that something was wrong with me because I was human. Because that's something that I think most survivors of abuse have had to deal with, is the fact that growing up abused so many times, children actually probably, I would say the majority of the time, even, you know, no matter how long the abuse went on, it doesn't matter if it's 6 months, you know, a year, 2 years, or their whole life, which is my case, we're not probably allowed to show any kind of true human responses to the abuse, right? So therefore, there's just some, you know, it warps and twists you, you know. Something was wrong with me because I was human. I think abused children growing up abused automatically take that on anyway, that there's something wrong with them. Because why would these people be, whoever it is, whether it's a parent or a caregiver of some type, why would they be doing that? Why would they be hurting them if, you know, if there wasn't something wrong with them? And also not allowed to feel emotions or to feel anything. I know we were not allowed to show any emotion towards what was going on in the house because it was such a nightmare. Like, my parents were fighting all the time. A lot of domestic violence. And that would cause a problem with, the children would freak out. So I came from a big family, so I'm the last of seven children. But there was only five left in the home because two had moved out when they were in their teens. They basically took off and went to the streets. So, you know, that left five of us in the home. But there was still a lot of kids around, and we all would be freaking out because my dad would be threatening to kill my mom, or my mom would be, you know, screaming and ranting and throwing dishes at my dad. Just any number of things. Or my dad would be threatening to kill the family, which he was quite often doing, or threatening to kill somebody, you know. And my mom was also doing that. That was threatening to kill me mainly. So, yeah, I grew up believing there was something wrong with me, you know, absolutely, because I was human. I wasn't allowed to feel pain. I wasn't allowed to feel sorrow. You know, if I cried, like I talked about that on quite a few of my shows, you know, and if we cried, we were just beaten again. Like, our parents would just beat us until we stopped crying. They'd be like, stop crying right now, or I'm going to keep beating you. And we would have to stop crying and pull it together, and then they'd stop. So you just learn right away. You don't cry. The beatings are a lot shorter, you know, version, just less damage if you stop crying, right? So you just take it. You know, and what then causes a lot of hatred in the heart, because I couldn't release any emotion about it, so I just it just stayed in there and became pent up rage. Right? So yeah, looking back on it, I mean, I did feel that there was definitely something wrong with me because, you know, I wasn't really treated as a human being, and that's the problem with abuse. So this person says, I grew up believing that I had power over other people's feelings and they had power over mine. Now, that's not my situation because I didn't have any power over my parents' feelings whatsoever. But my parents definitely had power over mine, so, and siblings as well. And they still do today. My siblings and I don't even talk. I cut them off because we still have no ability or capability to communicate in any kind of healthy way because of the abuse. We get along for a few weeks, but that's about it. It's very much a superficial level because we can't ever talk about anything from our past, anything at all, because it causes way too many problems, brings up way too much hurt, too much pain, and nobody wants to deal with it. So I'm the only one that's on my healing journey that is going public. The rest of my siblings, there's only two alive right now that are left, but they're very, very silent. Probably mortified that I've actually done this and gone public with our story, but I'm sure they are. I don't talk to them anymore. But the thing is I don't care, you know. This was wrong, what happened here, and abuse is wrong, and I don't mind speaking out about it. It makes me happy to do it because not that many people can do this, and so I don't mind doing it. But some of the stuff, like, I relate to, some of it I don't. But it is quite interesting. And just the fact that, you know, these boundary issues, for instance, what I've found in John Bradshaw's work mainly, and also Robert Burney's work, was the topic and the issue of copying or mimicking, mirroring, I suppose you want to say, mirroring my abuser's emotions. And that was so that I could prevent from being abused. I was always trying, you know, nobody probably knew that I was doing this, but I was always trying to avoid a beating, right? Because my mother was just always just shy of giving me a beating. She loved it. Any chance she got, she would be so happy. She could, like, throw me around the room and beat on me and throw me into walls and shove me into furniture and bash me and, you know, beat on me. She was just really highly wanting to, like, hurt me. I think she just got her jollies or something. I'm not sure what it was all about, but all I know is a real drag. And so I used to try to stick up for her. I basically took her side on everything, as much, even though she was my main abuser, my dad was abusing her. So I always took her side because I did feel that she was the one that was the victim in that. And I did take her side because I felt that she was right in that. It wasn't just to avoid abuse. But that's just one side of it. I also took her side on everything because I wanted to make sure that I was aligned with her emotionally. So if she was down, I was down. If she was sad, I was sad. I made sure, made a point to make her realize that because she was sad, I was sad. Or if she was hurting, I wanted for her to connect with her on that level so that she would see that I was agreeing with her, and that would then hopefully buy me some brownie points so that for a future date when she was going to abuse me, right? It didn't always work. It actually hard. I don't think it ever worked. I used to think it worked, but you know, I'd find out a few weeks later that it didn't. So it's kind of you know, bizarre, that behavior. Well, what that did to me by doing that is caused me then as an adult to mirror other people's emotions around me. So I catch myself doing it all the time. And it's not that I'm not empathetic, and you know, in my adult years, and somebody comes to me and they're telling me something that's gone on with their life, and they're very down and upset and you know, sad. Of course, that's gonna, you know, I'm gonna feel something about that. I'm gonna care, you know. But I find that it's really just it's almost like a reaction. It's just a natural reaction. I'm getting better as I get older to not mirror so much of that stuff. But I do tend to naturally, automatically do it. It's a little bit weird. I catch myself doing it. And I'm trying to actually break that, because it's just a habit formed from so long ago that I don't have to do that. You know, I'm my own person. And I have my own feelings, my own set of feelings, and I don't need to mirror other people's feelings. This person who wrote this article goes on to talk a little bit more about this in the next part of the article. So we'll pick that up on the next show. But I just think it's interesting. This stuff is so hard to see even in ourselves. And I had talked about it on the last show that I didn't even realize that I had so many boundary issues and problems like that until a life coach spotted it and actually brought it out to the forefront, you know, and actually told me about it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known what I was doing was even an issue with codependency or boundary issues or anything like that. So that's when I started actually getting busy looking into these things and actually started to get help, because I thought, man, I am really screwed up. You know, not in a bad way. I mean, as an adult, I'm doing really well. You know, I really am. And, I mean, I have my better days and better moments. But you know, I can hold a job, I can make things happen, you know, I'm a high functioning a survivor of abuse. But the thing is, I mean, I still have work to do. And it's, you know, I don't recognize a lot of this stuff in myself, and I need, you know, that's why I do a lot of studying, and I do a lot of looking into this stuff, so I can correct it. You know, because it's not necessary. This stuff is what I used to cope, and what we as children who were being abused used to cope a long time ago, and also used to try to help ourselves and, you know, to survive, basically survival skills. That's what they are. So they work at that time to try to help us to survive what we're trying to survive, which is the abuse, which is a miracle anybody survives it, right? And so as an adult, they don't work anymore. It's very dysfunctional. So then we have to lose that stuff. And it's hard, because this stuff, it was ingrained in childhood. So I think that's the issue. We don't recognize it because it's something that's been in there for so long. You know, how would you even recognize that there's something wrong with that behavior? And so it's interesting. It really is. So hopefully you're getting something out of this. I know I do. So we'll pick up the next part of this article next week. I should be here next week. I'm feeling a lot better and got over my cold, and things are going pretty good, so we'll pick up next week for sure. And here's some, as far as positive reinforcement, you know, what am I doing right in my daily walk? Well, I'm starting I'm going to start doing for real some exercise program because I got to get in better shape. This winter is going to be a long winter here in Canada, and I can't sit around just, you know, lazing around. I seriously need to get in better shape physically. So that's all part of this too, right? I don't care about my body because I was abused in every way, you know, physically, sexually. So to me, my body's ruined, and that's how I see it, you know. I don't see it as this great thing that I've been given, this gift, you know, that I should take care of. I just see it as this thing that's just wasted and was, you know, so not taken care of, and it's something that I guess it probably has leftover shame probably from the CSA child sexual abuse. That probably has a lot to do with it that I haven't dealt with. And also just the physical abuse from my mother mainly, some from my dad, but I think the stuff from my mother was a lot more damaging. And so I have a hard time with my myself, my body, right? And so I'm going to try to do better to take care of my body so that I can stick around for a few more years and actually do something with myself and, you know, live out the number of my days instead of just, you know, giving up early, right? I'm going to really work on it. This is something I'm working on starting, actually. I just started sort of looking into it the last couple of weeks. So that's one positive. And I'm trying to eat better and, you know, trying to take care of myself better. And that's a big, big deal for survivors of abuse. It's very difficult for anybody, but especially for people that are coming from behind the eight ball. Here's some self-nurturing ideas from Havoka. These are from Havoka, too. We're almost done looking at their stuff on their website, but I found it very helpful. As far as self-nurturing ideas, physiological needs, for one, eat breakfast or, you know, eat healthy, right? Take a nap, break a bad habit, if just for today. That's what I'm working on, breaking some bad habits. And it's a slow process, but I'm going to get there. Get at least 7 hours of sleep. That'll never happen for me. I don't sleep well at all. I mean, most abuse survivors, I don't think, do. And it's difficult. I don't, in my body, I don't really do well sleeping that long. But I'll sleep as long as I can, you know, probably 5 to 6 hours. Drink 8 glasses of water today. Some people say that's dangerous because you can overload your kidneys. I wouldn't even follow that. Just drink water, some water during the day. That's what I find that I try to do, is make sure I have a glass of water or a couple glasses of water throughout the day. Even just one is better than none. Eat a healthy snack. I'm working on that because I'm going to work on trying to get in better shape. Those are some important things that we could do, you know, as far as self-nurturing ideas. You can get these from Havoka as well. It's part of their it's their self-esteem affirmations, but they had some ideas, you know, for self-nurturing ideas there. So you can check that out there. So yeah, we only have a couple minutes left. So, I mean, this show goes really fast, but we'll have to, yeah, we've only got about a minute left. We'll pick up on the next one. So all I want to say to you, you know, if you're a survivor and you're struggling and you're having a hard time and you don't have a clue how you're going to make it through the night, because I've been there, so many of us have, you know, you have to reach out. You have to reach out. No one's going to know you're in that position, you know, and even if they did, would they be able to help you? Maybe not. You need to reach out. You need to call a crisis line. If you don't have somebody to talk to, which so many times we don't, most often we don't, then you need to call a crisis line. You need to get some help. There's people out there that care. There's people out there that have been abused that care, and they're sitting on those crisis lines, and they want to help. And they want you to make it, right? You have to want to make it, you know, and that's a decision I came down to, 41 years old, going on 42, you know, that I was going to live. I was not going to die. I was going to live. And that gave me victory over my abusers. That's my victory. They couldn't kill me. And so they couldn't even get me to kill myself, right? That's my victory. So I want that for you. And I want you to stick it out, get some help. Just talk to people you trust. Talk to some survivors, because there are some trustworthy survivors, especially over at NASCA, NAASCA.org, NASCA.org. Get a hold of somebody there. There's all kinds of really awesome survivors there. That's what we do, right? And get a hold of me. I'm available, like, all over the place. You can contact me, right? I want you to have a good night and or a good day wherever you are in the world there. Take good care of yourself until the next time. We'll talk to you next week.